In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to Side Hustle Pro, the podcast that teaches you to build and grow your side hustle from passion project to profitable business. And I'm your host, Nikayla Matthews Okome. So let's get started.
Hey, hey, friends. Welcome back to the show. It's Nikayla here, back with another episode. And today in the guest chair, I have Danielle Walton, and she is the founder of Hoop Mob. Hoop Mob is home of the hoop earring. She started it in 2019 after her time in the fashion industry between New York and Michigan. She felt like she spent a lot of time conforming to what was deemed appropriate in predominantly white spaces, and she wanted to highlight and celebrate hoops because of what they represent in Black and Brown culture, their form of self-expression. So today, the mom of one has grown the brand to over 7 figures in annual revenue with a community stretched across the country. I really enjoyed hearing her journey coming from Flint, Michigan, all the way to starting this amazing brand that I myself shop from and that I know that you'll love as well. So let's get right into it. All right. So welcome to the guest chair, Danielle. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. This is like, first of all, you don't know the impact of your podcast like the business world, but this is like one of my bucket lists to be on Side Hustle Pro.
I'm so honored. I could have, you know, you just never believe, never understand when you're just recording out of your closet and talking to people, of course, yes. But hearing and seeing the impact is always so surreal. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Of course.
And I have purchased from Hoop Mob. This is the thing that I have. It's like, it has roses and it says, what does it say on the top?
Yeah. Give us our flowers.
Yes, give us our flowers. I have that t-shirt. Let me tell you, I saw that. And we'll get into, you know, how you market and stuff like that, intentional versus just coincidence. But I saw it on one of my YouTube girls, Monroe Steele. Yes. And, you know, I buy like so much that she recommends. So
she is a problem.
She's a problem. I'm sure she sells out your site. So tell us a little bit about who you were growing up. I understand you're from Flint, Michigan, and shout out to Michigan. But Flint is kind of different, right? Like I grew up in the Bronx, so I think that it has some similarities there. So when you were in Flint, when you were growing up, what did you see yourself doing as an adult?
Yeah, so growing up, I was always the kid that wanted to do something in the arts. Like I was acting as a kid, like I wanted to, you remember those Barbizon schools?
Yes,
like
yes.
Like that was me signing up for those.
That would be a model.
Yeah. I wanted to cheer. I wanted to just, I was one of those kids who was like a dreamer, basically, which I don't want to say is odd in Flint, but it's just, you know, far-fetched that you can really make it that far from Flint. We are a automotive town. So General Motors is there. Buick was there, you know, so it was more like a factory town, kind of like a, you know, middle class, lower middle class town. And then they took a lot of the factories away. So I kind of just saw the decline of the city. But for me growing up, like I was always wanting to do something. I know my mama was tired of me.
Like we gotta go win it all. I gotta take you
in. I wanna do gymnastics and I wanna do this and I wanna do that. And like thankfully she really did like expose me to a lot of things. So I was really grateful for that. But yeah, I was definitely just an ideas person. It's so funny, like growing up and becoming an adult, you really like your younger self knew the whole time.
Oh,
you know
yes.
what I mean? So
yes.
I would come up with ideas and my cousins, I'm like, all right, this week we're going to do this. And they're like, oh God, here she goes, you know.
We just want to play, Danielle. Like, can we just go outside?
No, we're going to do a lemonade stand. You know, and it was like all these ideas all the time.
I love it.
It's so funny. I always had that like entrepreneurial mind.
That drive. It is so funny to look back at who you were as a kid because that creative spirit is really what was giving us signs all along, like you said. And sometimes, you guys, that might be a hint. You just need to tap back into your inner child a little bit. Like, who was I before I started living for societal expectations, before I started doing what I thought and think I should be doing? Who was I? And go from there. Yep. So,
yes, exactly.
I understand you moved from Flint to New York at some point. Why did you make that move? What were you doing in New York?
So I went back and forth for a second. I went out there to intern.
Okay.
I was going to a local community college. I went to Mott Community College in Flint. And but you know, we grew up in that era where we're watching The Hills and The City and like all those girls, they're doing these fashion internships, and I was already really into fashion. So when it came time for an internship, I'm like, well, only internships I know is fashion internships in New York. So I'm going to try for that, you know? So I was just applying for all of these different internships. I ended up getting one at Marie Claire magazine in New York. So I went there for 5 months. And while I was there, I was also interning at Ellie Tahari, which is a brand like at Lord & Taylor. Stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I know Tahari.
So yes. So I did that for a while. I came back home, you know, finish school. And then my friend, Corey Stokes, he's big in the fashion game now, but he was able to kind of hire his own assistants at that point. He was a stylist.
Yeah.
And so he's like, well, whenever you're ready, like, come on out and I can get you, you know, a job, like a freelance job.
Okay, Corey.
And I was working. I know. I was like, listen, you ain't got to tell me twice. Right.
Shout out to friends that put their friends on.
Yes, always. So he told me that, and I was literally there no later than 3 weeks.
Okay.
So I moved to New York and slept in his living room. I literally put like a little twin bed in his living room and just was grinding. Like once I got there, I was working with him. I was, so what I would do is go to Barnes & Noble's on the weekend.
Yeah.
I would pull all these fashion magazines, sit and like look up who are the stylists, who's the editors, like the photographers, and I would email them. I would Google and find their email addresses and say like, oh, you know, I'm an assistant. Do you need an assistant coming up or anything? And they would email me back and say, yeah, I need an assistant for this shoot, or, oh yeah, we're doing test shoots and we need some help. So that really worked out for me.
What? I love it. I love the drive. Like, I remember, too, going to Barnes & Noble myself. Like, oh, those were the days. Like, just sitting there, not buy nothing, but I'm going to read all this. Get all this inspo. And for you to take that extra step of reaching out to these people, that is amazing. Okay, tip right there, y'all. Don't be afraid to reach out to people. Now, what happened next? I know you didn't go from interning in fashion to starting Hoop Mob, right? You had a lot of life to live in between that. So what was that journey before you became an entrepreneur?
So in New York, I wanted to be in fashion. That's all I knew. It was like, I wanted to work in fashion some kind of way. I was really creative. But I would say my time in New York was really interesting because I was kind of bouncing around mm-hmm. from job to job. I worked at like a consignment store in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I took a full-time internship at Oprah Magazine.
Ooh.
In their fashion closet.
You were working with all the greats. I love it.
Yes. I was soaking up all that knowledge. So I worked in their fashion closet. I was their jewelry intern, which mm-hmm. is ironic considering now I have a jewelry business. But
life shows us signs. Don't you? Love that thing. Life shows us signs, y'all. Pay attention. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. And so I did some time there, and then I ended up getting hired full time at Brooks Brothers in their marketing department. And so really just kind of on their e-commerce shoots, you know, helping on set. Sometimes I would help pack up all of the clothes, and e-commerce is really just kind of like a tedious, like kind of routine. So, but I really enjoyed my time there. It was good. But after a while, New York is great, but the older you get, you're like, oh man, this is getting old. I'm like,
you gotta take
I don't want to deal with
time. Yeah, you gotta take a New York break sometimes.
Yes.
I didn't even know I would be coming back to New York. I'm in New York now because, yeah, I reached that point too where it's like, I don't want roommates or living at home. I'm from New York, so I moved back home with my parents. To get my own place, I had to leave.
Yeah.
So exactly. What happened after you were like, okay, enough New York.
Okay, this is enough. And I remember the day. It was so funny. I was, it was snowy. Mm-hmm. It was like that slushy, nasty snow. I was commuting from 42nd Street to like Fulton, like deep in Brooklyn, you know what I mean? And I'm like walking home from the train. I'm like, why am I doing this? This is just like, I knew I wasn't completely happy at my job because although I achieved that dream of like corporate job in New York City, working in fashion, I wasn't able to be creative. Mm-hmm. And I still felt like, okay, maybe this is not completely it.
Okay.
And so I did a little bit of soul searching, like, okay, what do I want to do next? But I figured I could figure that out at home. Mm-hmm. I was like, for what I'm paying here and like the, you know, it's just not as comfortable as I want to be. So I went home, moved back in with my mom, and she was so gracious of like, figure it out, whatever you want to do, like was not pressuring me to like, you know, find a job right away and, you know, hurry up and get out of her house. She was really just kind of giving me grace to figure out what I wanted to do next. So I just started working here at like, I still wanted to like hold on to that fashion thing. Right. So I was working, I worked at Saks. I worked at Neiman's. Mm-hmm. I worked at J. Crew for a little while.
Were you working remotely or in the, Detroit office,
Detroit locations? Like, okay. At the retail stores.
Got it.
So, which was also very, I don't know, anywhere I worked, I really tried to think of it as like, what am I supposed to learn from mm-hmm. this place? Like during my time here, what am I supposed to take away? So working in New York in like the fashion capital, it's mm-hmm. kind of like a bubble. New York is like a little bubble. Like New York feels like nowhere else really exists or matters.
Right. So to step out of that.
To step out of that and then still working with like, you know, high-end designers at Saks and Neiman's and stuff like that to see how people were responding to the clothes. You know, you're in a space where it's like, oh, fashion shows and runway and, you know, all of that. But then to see how people actually react to the clothes, it was like really a learning experience of like, okay, this doesn't work for everybody. Or when you put it in the real world, you know, people want their arms covered or they want this or they want that, you know. So I really kind of soaked everything in from every job that I had. I soaked it
all. Oh, interesting. So people had different considerations. Like in New York, it's like, I just want to dress to impress. And I saw it on the runway. I don't care. Put it on me. Whereas in real life, everyday communities where people are just like everyday middle class workers, they're just like, okay, what's practical? I want to look good, but also I have some practical needs.
Yeah. And I, you know, So for now, with my business now, it's really, we listen to the customer so much. It's so important, I feel like, to monitor the customer, seeing how they're reacting to things. And I really kind of took that from my time in retail.
Excellent. Excellent. Very wise of you. Now, at what point did you start side hustling?
So I kind of always was a side hustler, which is funny. During my time in New York, I started a home decor business. Okay. I was making candles.
Oh.
Yeah. So I had a business in New York called Walton Home in New York. And so I was making candles. I was making little prints, like wall prints and stuff like that. And was kind of just doing that on my spare time. I tried to do that still when I came home, but it just wasn't really catching on like I wanted it to. And I tried styling people. It's really hard to style people in from Michigan. So it's not the market for that.
Why is it hard to style people from Michigan?
It's just, not people from Michigan. Oh. I'm just saying this is not the market. You know, people don't really understand having a stylist, or don't even see the need to have a stylist, you know? So I was always trying to figure out something. And then with Hoop Mop, let's see, in 2017, I got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so that really kind of put a hold on everything. I'm like, okay, let me just, I was working, was pregnant. I had my baby in January 2018. And then I was stay-at-home mom for several months.
Yeah.
But during that time, I was still kind of looking for what is that next thing for me? Just thinking of ideas. I'm a big vision board person.
Yes.
Pinterest is my best friend. I have a million hidden boards on Pinterest.
Same.
Ideas and everything. So, like I said, I was a stay-at-home mom for 8 months. And then I actually started working with the Lip Bar. So I was a good friend, Roscoe and Melissa. We all lived in New York at the same time.
Okay.
So, Roscoe just hit me up one day and was like, oh, do you want to do social for the Lip Bar? I'm like, yeah, why not?
I love that connection. Big fans of the Lip Bar over here.
Same. So I started working for the Lip Bar, and I worked for them for a year and a half. And it was such a good experience because, one, it just feels so good to work with Black girls every day, all day, you know?
Yes.
So it was a really good, nurturing environment to just, all my peers were amazing. But then not only that, it was an opportunity for me to grow, because mm-hmm. with having different businesses and wanting to do different things, I had a limiting mindset of okay, you have great ideas, but you don't know how to make money from them.
Ooh.
Or you have good ideas, but you don't know how to build a platform. You don't know how to build an audience. You know what I mean? So I would tell myself these things. And I feel like God gave me that opportunity at the Lip Bar to show me no, look at what you're doing for this company. You do know how to do this.
Yes.
You're helping them grow. You're helping to create, and it was that opportunity to be creative. So like I said, in New York, I felt like I wasn't really given the opportunity to really be creative like I wanted to be. And working at the Lip Bar, it was so natural for me because the voice of the brand was resonated.
Right.
You know what
I
mean? So I was able to really kind of just be creative. So
that is really phenomenal. I didn't know that about your background. That is so awesome, because you bring up some really important points. The fact that we can't move forward unless we learn to address our biggest critic, which is the voice in our head that tells us these things. We like to blame it on imaginary people oh, what will they think? Or they'll say this. No, it's you. It's you. So let's address what you're telling yourself and why, and unpack that. Yeah. And I love that not only were you doing it for them, but you also got to see a Black woman CEO in action who looks like you.
Absolutely.
You know, has style and a personality like you. And you're like, well, if she can do it, I can do it. You know, and she's also
Absolutely.
From a city in Michigan, right? She's Detroit, right? And you're Michigan and you're Flint.
Yes.
So yeah, it's like, mm-hmm. how much more I can do this can it get? So at that point, what was the first step you took to get started? Did you know Hoop Mop mm-hmm. was going to be your thing at that point?
So it was so funny. I was at the office one day with the girls, and I was like, hey, I got this idea. And I just kind of ran it by them to see, you know, to get feedback. Mm-hmm. And immediately everyone was like, yes, absolutely. When are you going to start it? Like, start this immediately. And I'm like, really? Are you sure? I'm like, okay. So still, I was really kind of nervous to start it because, again, still working through that mindset piece of like, you know, you can do this. But I started working on it, and it's so funny because God was literally putting so many people in my life to say like, hello, no, you can do this, because my daughter, her dad, he actually has an e-commerce brand, and I was helping with that at the time. And that's when I realized that I really did like e-commerce. I love the just being able to put a product out there, put an idea out there, and seeing people's response to it, seeing how they, you know, they're posting and they're sharing and they're liking that. And so it was him. And then it was like confirmed with like being with the lip bar. Like, I just really saw like, oh, I like this.
Yeah.
And so the idea for Hoops came from, I was literally at home. When I was at home, a stay-at-home mom, I was Googling and YouTubing like how to make $1 million. $1 million ideas.
Don't we all? Know, like,
yeah. Business ideas for 20 to 18, you know, like all of that. And so all of these like drop shipping videos kept coming up. I really liked watching them because these guys were like starting a store from scratch and walking you through like their first sale.
Yes.
And I was like, this is so interesting. But then when I started to think about it, I'm like, I could never drop ship. Like, that would be so nerve wracking for me, of like never seeing the product and not being in that process, you know? And then I was trying to think of like what that product could be for me though, you know, like they, cause a lot of them had like single product stores.
Okay.
And I'm like, that is so interesting. Like, my mind was blown by the concept and just like how much money they were making and stuff. So when I thought about jewelry, and then I was like, oh, Hoops. And I'm like, oh, wait, Hoops. Like, I know this really kind of is deeper than just like how to make $1 million. You know, it really means something to me. It means something to my community.
Yep.
I'm like, I know I can connect with women through this. You know what I mean? Right. So it was like, oh, this is a great idea, you know? And when I shared it with people, and even when I started it, I launched it with almost no inventory. Like, It was almost comical. No, it was like, I was so afraid to invest that I bought like 5 of this, 10 of this, you know.
I could relate. Relatable content.
Yeah. Listen, I really did not. I was so scared to invest in inventory. But when I launched it, you know, it's everything pretty much sold out same day. And which again was not much, so it was easy to sell out.
But it looks good when you sell out, though. It looks good.
It does. But so from there, I would, you know, I wouldn't restock right away. Mm-hmm. I was still, like I said, working full time, so I really wasn't putting my full energy in it. And at least on 3 different occasions, random like friends, but mm-hmm. like, you know, friends that I don't talk to that often, called me and what. So I remember specifically this girl was like, I know you have all the ideas all the time, but you might want to keep this one. Like, this one is a really good idea.
Wow.
Like, don't let this die. Like, I know you had the home decor stuff and that was cute and you know, whatever, but like, don't let this one die.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, you know. And then come 2020, I wasn't working at the lip bar anymore. Mm-hmm. And I had this box of inventory sitting that I just kind of wasn't, you know, I hadn't listed it or anything. And I was like, you know what, let me start like putting my all into this, because I think with running a business, with marketing, like when you're first starting off, you have so many things, internal things that, you know, you're telling yourself that really don't matter. I don't want to post all day. I don't want to get on people's nerves.
Yep.
I don't want to seem like I'm driving this down their throat. You know, I don't want to seem. And it's like, you got to make some money, you know?
Right.
You got a business to run. So I told myself I have to put my ego down.
Yes.
Basically, I have to put my pride aside. Mm-hmm. I have to put my ego down, and I have to really like put my all into this.
Yeah.
And so I had a really cute, like, aesthetic Instagram for the brand, you know, mm-hmm. But then I started promoting on Facebook as well. And then when I started promoting on Facebook, a lot of my friends were like, oh, I didn't know you were doing this. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, you think people see stuff, but they don't. Yeah. You know what I mean? So once I started promoting on Facebook, people were sharing. Mm-hmm. People were like, oh, you know, what? When are you getting more of this? You know? And I remember one day we had done as much in one day as we had done the previous month.
Wow.
So that whole month of March, I think, we had done all of that in one day in April. And it was very minimal. It was like under $600, but it still was like, huh, okay.
Yeah, you know, we're onto something. This is interesting. That shows the potential.
Exactly.
And I love that you, again, bring up that just how much you have to push past yourself in this process. So I think that is the biggest obstacle. Like, I have a side hustle guide and I spend time focusing on that because it is truly the biggest obstacle. It's not anyone else. It's not money. It's not business cards. It's not website. No, it's what you tell. It's not logo. It's what you tell yourself. And sometimes we use those things. We tell ourselves, oh, I need that. That's what's holding me back. But again, it's inner work. It's the mindset piece. And it's that inner critic, not even so much ego or whatever. It's the inner critic. And I also love that you remind us that people are not seeing your posts as much as you think. So you can post all you want. And don't even worry about it because different people are going to see different posts. It will not be too much because just the way the algorithm works, they are not seeing it all. And it's funny because this happens too. Like, I have posted less about this pregnancy, but every time I post, someone's like, oh my God, where have I been? And I'm like, nowhere. I posted one post and everyone didn't see it because of course everyone doesn't see your posts. So I'm like, you've been where you are. Don't worry. Let's get into the inventory piece. I'm curious how you matched your vision with a manufacturer that fit your vision, that felt unique to Hoop Mob, and while also, you know, not physically making every piece yourself. How did you go about that process?
So a lot of long nights on the computer, literally. A lot of long nights. A lot of our vendors and our manufacturers are, of course, overseas. Yes. So I'm like talking to them all hours of the night. But it's literally just, and it's so funny because, you know, you get people that are like, well, you know, are you going to teach a class, share your vendors, this and that? And I'm like, it's like a hodgepodge. You know what I mean? Like, you understand. You're like, you try this out and you're like, okay, they're good for this. Mm-hmm. They're good for this. Like, I can source this from this person, or I think they can make me this because I see that they make this. You know what I mean? So I literally have just had to put together like a combination of good manufacturers and vendors that I trust. And that's a process too. You know, you have to test them out, try them out. A lot of our stuff we do, you know, wear test and make sure it's not too heavy, make sure it's not going to irritate you, all of those things. So it's just a lot of testing and learning. So we also were, you know, sourcing from LA and New York and stuff like that. But Hoop Mob grew so fast to where they didn't have enough of what we needed. You know what I mean? So we had to quickly like pivot from that. So Michaela, it is not figured out. Okay. It is still a learning process because, you know, we're continuing to grow and now we're getting into more, you know, original designs to us. Mm-hmm. And we're having to go through that process of like, just back and forth with our manufacturers and making sure we get, you know, to the correct product. Yeah.
It's okay to not, I'm still I'm figuring stuff out every day. Like, that's the real of entrepreneurship. I think anyone who comes on here and acts like they're all, have it all figured out, is like lying.
Point blank.
And it's just not relatable for most of us. So I hear that 100%. If someone wanted to start a business like accessories, jewelry, whatever it is, what's a reasonable investment they should be ready to put down for inventory?
Honestly, it can vary. Like, I just snowballed it. So I feel like when I went from just a little teeny tiny amount of inventory to like, okay, a sizable amount, I mean, you could spend anywhere between like $500 to $1,000 and just investing in like a small collection. I wouldn't I wouldn't just go, you know, balls to the wall and just everything. Right. I would just start with, you know, a small kind of collection of, and then kind of test and see what your audience likes, what connects with you, you know what I mean? Because I think you have to kind of connect with it too, to be able to really market it well. But yeah. I would say you can start with definitely like $1,000 or less.
Okay. And when you start with that, how do you determine pricing for these things? Are you just looking at what other people are charging for similar wares, or do you have another pricing structure?
So my accountant will tell you right now that he is over me in my pricing, okay? Because
I'm like, let me go on the website now and order before hike up these prices. All right.
He's like, what are you doing?
Because people come on this show and then the prices change.
Listen, we are always going to be affordable, but that was my thing. I'm like, okay, let me make sure we're definitely making a profit, but while remaining affordable. However, as we're growing, there was stuff that I wasn't accounting for, like the marketing expenses, like, you know, packaging, like all of the other little costs that go into like pricing something. And then once, you know, demand goes up and I'm like, all right, well, I think we can like raise this maybe like a dollar or two. And my accountant's like, what math did you do for that? Like, what was your...
Thank you, accountant.
What was your thought process around that? Right.
How'd you get to this?
Right.
It's so true.
So, yeah, it's definitely still like testing and learning. But I do think... I think we will always remain really affordable. Like what I have on now, like this is part of our Luxe collection, which is still really affordable.
You know, I've been staring at this jewelry the whole time, y'all. You got to check us out on YouTube because I'm like, okay, copping that. Like I love a good stack. And I feel like, you know, and this is why influencer work is so important, because I need to see it styled. Like sometimes I can't look on a website and say, oh, that would look good together. But when I see it styled, I'm like, oh, give me all of that. She wore that. Like, I like how she wore it. Give it all to me. And that's what I'm going to do after this call.
You know what?
I will go on the website. Look at everything you're wearing.
Thank you. That is so funny.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
That's a huge part of just how we connect to our audience, too. So I go live every week. And it's like a party every week. Like, it is so funny. They come in on the lives and they're in the comments like, hey, y'all. Hey, how you doing?
Like, it's a meetup. It's a meetup.
Yeah. So, but like you said, it's important to see it. So sometimes I'm like, ooh, I know they haven't thought to pair these two things together. So I'll put it together on live, or, you know, I'm showing the new arrivals or showing things that's coming. Yes. So yeah, that's super important for us.
We didn't talk about the name, but Hoop Mob, I just love that name. You know why? Because it immediately signals community. It's like it immediately is, I buy this, but I'm also part of something. How did you come up with the name?
It literally just came to me. I was playing with names, and originally I thought of Hoop Gang, but I went to look up like the hashtag and stuff, and people were already using that name. So I went to, back to the drawing board, and I just came up with Hoop Mob, and I'm like, I like this. I like the look of it. Like, it was, I don't know, it just stuck to me. So, but you're right. Every time we have like a huge drop or something and stuff is selling out really quickly, people are like, the mob was the perfect name.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
they mob, that, that's all they do.
They
the mob don't play. Like, so yeah. But it is, it's such a community. And I think, you know, when people talk about, you know, positioning and like what sets you apart, yes, of course you can get accessories almost anywhere. But I think the fact that we celebrate who our customers are, we specifically talk to Black and Brown women, and they feel a part of this. They're like, they have a sense of pride shopping with us and wearing our things. So I think that really kind of makes the difference for us.
Now, a few years, not even a few, but 4 years in, right? We're 4 years in to Hoop Mob. What's your system for determining how much of each product to get so that you're not underestimating yourself and you're not frustrating your audience, but you're also not carrying too much inventory?
It is a delicate dance. So we, so my sister, she is also like huge into fashion. She lives in New York as well. She is like our buyer now. So she helps with that. And her and I put together kind of like some basics of like, okay, if this is a style that is kind of risky, then we're like, okay, we're only gonna buy, like, we have a base number of like, no more than this. And then we test it to see if it sells out quickly, if it's just sitting, and that helps us to determine if we're gonna restock it or not. For example, so we have in the mob, if they see this before it comes out, they're gonna be jumping for joy. But we have a collection called the Melanated Collection, and it's different shades of brown hoops. And so those are like, have been like our top seller for 2.5 years now. Like, they're always selling. And so we know they love that, and they've been asking for a smaller size. So we're going to create a smaller size, and that we know we can invest deep into. And it's important to, for us, what I was coming up against is like, okay, let's say I buy, I only buy 100 of something. That doesn't really give me, unless, you know, if I know that this is something that they have either been asking for or like, or, you know, it's very similar to something else that I really liked. If it sells out quickly, that really doesn't give me time to, like, for marketing. Let's say we did like a full campaign on it and it sells out first day. We can't even use those pictures anymore. You know what I mean? So it's such a,
I didn't even think about that, right?
So yes. A lot of my friends, they're like, oh, I didn't think about that. It's so deep. It's like, if we spend money on models, a photographer, all of that, and then that thing sells out day one, it's great. It sold out, but we could have sold so many more. You know what I mean? If we had more and if we would invested in it more. And if we can run, you know, ads on something and kind of give it a little bit more breathing room and a little bit more time, like, so for those things, anything that you see in an ad from Hoop Mob, we have at least 500 or more of those. Like, it's, we have a lot of that thing because I still personally run our ads. So I don't like to have to switch the ads every other week.
I get that.
It has to be like a set it and forget it type of thing.
I get that.
All right. We got a bunch of this. Yep. We're going to let these ads run and do its thing.
And you know, when they go, when they click on it, they're going to be able to get it.
Yes.
When things exactly. do sell out, though, how quickly do you reorder? Do you ever say, all right, this sold out, I still have more promo for it, so I'm going to place another order? And maybe on the website, it's like a, what do they like to put? Pre-order, right? You have
sign
that.
Sign up for restock. Oh, yep. No,
we don't do pre-orders. Okay.
I mean, we've done it a few times, and every time it's a disaster. So
Thank you for your honesty. Why is it a disaster?
Because there's so many variables that you can't account for. So maybe just out the blue, you know, your package is stuck in somewhere, you know, and it's like, I promised them this by this day and we're not able to get it. So now we're having to backtrack with like offering them a discount code to make sure, you know, just to keep the customers happy. We're having to do all this extra communicating and stuff. When we first started, we did a t-shirt, and right now our t-shirts are print on demand. So they're, you know, third party, but we did a t-shirt, and I had a friend who does shirts and stuff. So he was going to make them for us, and we did pre-orders for those, and the blanks sold out.
What is that? What do you mean the blanks?
The shirt blanks. So you know how you have to buy the shirt.
Oh, the actual and shirt. Then you print on yes, them. Yes. Yes. Oh no. So,
like, are you kidding me?
Right. Because you pick a certain shirt, you know, you pick the feel that you like, the cut, all of that. So if it sells out, you can't just, I'm going to get any black t-shirt to print on.
No. And it was like an acid wash shirt. Oh, we had to take pictures in that exact shirt and like was marketing that shirt that fit that size, and it sold out. So I'm like, what are we going to do now? So we had to pivot and do a different cut of that shirt. And we had to like communicate that to the customers and show them. I was like, we're not doing this.
No. I get it now. So, I get it. Yeah. And one other thing too, with manufacturing, I used to work for a e-commerce retailer as well. And we would do drop shipping where, you know, we would do pre-orders. Everything was like, you place your order, then we communicate to the manufacturers how many we need based on how the sale went. And then they were supposed to ship us that amount, and they would often short ship. So you place an order for 100. Why am I getting 97? Now I got to go back to the customer and say, oh, I know you paid for this. You entered your card information, but you're not getting it.
And now you're a scammer.
Now you're the scammer. So much can happen. Very, very important to know about this stuff. How are you doing in the space of finances? A lot of people lose money. A lot of people earn and make a lot when they first start out. What has been your experience?
So we have been really lucky in that we haven't lost any money. We've been profitable pretty much since day one. Okay. However, we have like the profits are less and less the more you grow.
Talk about it.
So you're investing in more, you're expanding your team. Mm-hmm. Like now we're a team of 7.
Okay.
With a few contractors as well. We're spending more on ads and just like, so when Hoop Mob started, it literally started just guerrilla style. Like there was no website design. I was using a Shopify template up until like this year. we did not have a web design. Luckily my daughter's dad, he's a graphic designer, so he made the logo.
Okay.
The original logo, but like it was like no overhead costs, because my idea, my thought process was how we were talking about, you know, all the colors and the logo and then this and that. I didn't want any of that to stop me from like getting to my first sales. You know what I mean? Yep. So I just kind of went out there very bare bones. Luckily, like I do have an eye, so I was able to take really good pictures with my phone. Mm-hmm. I got a camera, so I was able to take good pictures myself, but still like, I mean, up until very recently, I was still like taking pictures. When it first started, like I was doing all of the modeling myself, you know, going live. It was like a one woman show, like sending out the emails,
mailing
out the
packages.
Like everything was me.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, my mom, she came on and she was like our shipping manager.
Okay.
But like all the marketing and like the technical side of the website was me. So, you know, as I have to let those things go and kind of delegate those things to other people, you know, your expenses grow. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Mama now. I understand that you convinced her to quit her job to work for you. What, tell us this story. How did that come about?
So my mom, she is, everybody loves her. She's the sweetest person. She is such a hard worker. And when Hoop Mile started taking off, she would come over, she would work her job and then call me and say, you need help with anything? And I'm like, I do actually. So she would come over every day and like help me package things.
Shout
help
out
me.
To mamas.
She would take stuff to the, I know, shout out to mama. She would take stuff to the post office, especially because I had a daughter. Like my daughter was 2 at the time when stuff started taking off. So she was really just like helping me every step of the way. And my grandmother, just passed not too long ago, but she was coming over doing what she could. It was, it was like a whole little thing. So, we had Hoop Mile had crossed the 6-figure mark and I was still scared to hire. Like we were still doing everything out of my dining room. And, my friend Kiana, she is a lawyer. She opened her law firm and I went to the opening and we're talking and, you know, I'm telling her, I'm like, yeah, we crossed 6 figures. She's like, oh my God. And I'm like, I feel like I need to hire somebody. She's like, yeah. She's like, when you're going to hire, like, you can hire somebody, like, please, you're going to kill yourself. You need to hire somebody. And I knew I wanted to hire my mom just because she had been there from the start. Mm-hmm. And any job she's ever had, they loved her.
Yes.
Like she's so hardworking, always on time. Like she's one of those people, just very dependable, very like, you know, solution oriented, all of that. So she came over one day and I said, well, I think it's time. I think you should quit your job. And she's like, huh? And I'm like, I was like, I told her like how much I was, you know, I would be able to pay her. And I was like, so can you quit Friday? It was like Tuesday.
Oh, my
she was
God.
Like, yep, I sure can.
She said, that'll do
she
it.
She quit her job. Yes, because, again, like in Flint, we were in Flint, like the outskirts of Flint, basically, at that time. And there's a lot of like factory jobs and stuff like that. And so that's what she was doing. And I'm like, you know, they barely get a lunch break. They got to work 6 days a week. And it's like, you know, you can't be on your phone. And I'm like, that is just not how my mom should be living. Okay. So I was just so happy that I was able to build this with her, basically. And still, like, I'm sure she's at the office right now. Like, this is her baby. She don't play about Hoop Mile because it's my baby. You know what I mean?
Yes. So I just think that's so impressive. A lot of people, we want to hire family or we want to retire family even, and to have your ducks in a row enough to be able to do that, that is really impressive. And it doesn't always have to look like super smooth. Like, for example, when you did that, did you have an official payroll processor or were you just going to do that just manually doing your bookkeeping still?
Yeah, so I had an accountant, but we weren't doing payroll yet.
Okay.
And so my accountant was like, well, you can just schedule bank transfers, like, you know, Zelle payments or something like that every 2 weeks. And just so we have record of like, you know, payments being made. But no, we didn't start doing payroll until the following year.
Got it. And how did you find your accountant? I love that you have that squared away.
Yes. So she was actually from Flint as well, but she was living in Atlanta. And I always knew of her and knew that she did that. And so the first month that we did 5 figures, I think our first month was like 12,000. And I was like, girl, tell me what to do. I don't know what to do. Like, I want to make sure I'm not, you know, that I'm really making this work. So, I got her on board right away.
Amen. I love it. You can't have Uncle Sam coming after you like, hey, how much did you make? Where's that money?
Exactly.
Where's my cut?
Exactly.
How have you gone about expanding your team, hiring the right people who are also, like your mom, dependable and solution oriented?
It's funny. I have a lot of family and a lot of friends working for me, which I know a lot of people could, you know, speak against that. And I totally understand. But so like I said, my mom works for me, my sister, my aunt, and then some people that I've worked with in the past have come on board. And so how I go about it is basically, I don't know, I really think I'm good at kind of seeing people's skill sets outside of, like, you know, what they're doing. Like, okay. If I can see, like, you know what, she's really good at this, and maybe she doesn't know it, you know. For example, my aunt, she is, and we're like the same age, so she's not, you know, an older auntie. So she loves hoop mop. That's first of all. So just even her love for the brand makes her really dependable, and she cares. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I saw that. I'm like, she really cares about the company and the success of the company. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I could bring her on board. And so she manages, like, the inventory, basically. Anything that comes in, she's warehousing it, putting it away, counting it, making sure Shopify matches up with what we actually have. Yep. So she does all of that. But when we do anything in person, like a pop-up, we just went to Essence Fest, for example. Nice. She is so good with customers. It is just insane. Like, the upselling, the making sure, in Essence, like, we had, so our booth, praise God, we had, like, a line in our booth, and, like, people were waiting, you know? And so some people were getting frustrated, and you can kind of see that. Yeah. And she was like, are you okay? Is everything good? Do you need anything? Yeah, like, it was funny to watch. Yes. But just seeing that, you know, I'm really paying attention to things, because mm-hmm. we do plan to expand to, you know, open a retail store in the future. Ooh, and I'm like, she's going to manage that store because she's so good at this. She's so good at, like, customer service, and she cares about the products and the, you know, just the merchandising, all of that. I'm like, okay, I can see her doing that. My sister, for example, I'm like, okay, she came on board initially doing customer service mm-hmm. just because it was remote. We needed somebody. She was living in New York. But then I'm like, she went to Parsons. Like, why is she doing customer service? Like, she needs to be in the mix, you know what I mean, with the products.
Yeah.
So she now helps with the buying, and I think she loves that. What I'm really doing is empowering people who, mm-hmm. like me, when I was in New York, I feel like nobody was, like, giving me the opportunities mm-hmm. that I wanted or mm-hmm. that I could do, you know what I mean, for example. And so I'm just really paying attention to people, and I'm like, I think they can do this, and I'm, like, empowering them to do it. Okay. And I think people feel really good when they are trusted with more responsibility. They perform well. They're appreciated for it. So, yeah, my hiring process has not been, like, Indeed Post. I think we did that once, but then we ended up hiring somebody that was, like, related to my friend.
love it.
Still, like, all in the family.
I'm always curious about that, because family dynamics are so interesting. Like, I would wonder, you know, if some families would be like, I'm not listening to you. Like, oh, thanks for hiring me. Don't tell me what to do. You know, like, who you talking to?
Yes. And even my mom, it's so interesting, because I was like, that's my mom, but girl, we got to run this business.
Right. You got to separate it.
Yes. But I think, it just depends on everyone's personality. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and there is some people, not family, but, like, maybe some friends or whatever, that I'm like, I couldn't trust you in here. You know what I mean? So I definitely think you have to, I don't know, have some intuition about
know who you're dealing
personalities
with.
And all of that. So,
You have grown to this amazing point where you can hire, grow your team, pay family. Let's talk about what it took to get there. What did you do in the early days to market the business, to grow your following, so that you grew such a huge customer base?
Mm-hmm. So initially, again, just kind of, I guess, diversifying our marketing from Instagram and Facebook. Mm-hmm. And then, but I started going live pretty early.
Okay.
And I think that was really helpful. And just people seeing the product. Number one, it was 2020, so people were just at home anyway. So it was pretty, you know, it was, I don't want to say easier, but you could get people's attention pretty quickly because everybody's at home. But I was going live. We started a Facebook group, which I think was really, really helpful, because if you think about it, like, I can see how people would get discouraged when they're posting and nobody's interacting, mm-hmm. or did anybody see it, or we only got 3 likes. Oh, Lord. You know, I can see how people will get discouraged by that. So when we've made our Facebook group, the group is literally just to market my products and my brand and to interact with my customers. So it's like focused attention. You know what I mean?
But how do you entice people to join that? Like, why would they want to join a Facebook group just about you marketing to them? I'm sure that's not how you position it, right?
So there was some scarcity built in our brand, not purposefully, but just because we weren't investing a lot into inventory initially. I think that whole thing of like, oh, she's going to sell out. Let me make sure I can see it and, you know, and that I'm notified first. But also, our group was like open initially. So we were just adding people.
Oh,
like, you know, it was like invite, like, hey, get on the computer, invite all of these people. So we were just adding people and they didn't mind. You know what I mean? Cause it's like, oh, this is cute stuff. And I think that had a lot to do with it too, because although our marketing was very kind of like bare bones, it was still, I still made sure like we have good lighting. The pictures are clear.
Yeah.
The videos are nice. You know what I mean? It's not a bunch of crap in the background. You know what I mean? Right. It was still like, everything was still pretty polished, you know, and people were kind of intrigued by it, like, oh, I love hoops. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, let's see what this is about. And then the fact that it was like actually cute stuff. It was selling out fast. So it was kind of creating that like buzz and anticipation. And then when I would go live and it's like, oh, this week she has a new color. Oh, this week there's a bigger size. Oh, this week, you know. So the lives are really, really important to the growth of our brand. And then once we got to a certain point where, you know, we were generating enough revenue, that's when I started investing into Facebook ads. And that really kind of took us to the top. So,
and did you do any investment in influencer marketing, or did that happen organically from people discovering your brand and wanting to share with their audience?
We didn't start doing influencers until last year.
Okay.
So, we ran we definitely tested out a bunch of influencers, last year, and we took a budget and we're like, okay, we're going to split this. We're going to try to get 10 influencers and just see how it goes. We're going to repurpose their content into ads and just, you know, see how this goes. And it went really well as far as like brand recognition and just, you know, getting more eyes on us. But some of the collaborations were bigger. So we did a collection with Signed Blake.
Okay.
And that one did really, really well for us. And then we did like a bigger collaboration, like you said, with Monroe Steele. Mm-hmm. And her, literally, all I have to, if I look at our analytics and it's it's traffic coming from YouTube, I'm like, oh, Monroe must have mentioned us. Which video is she talking about us seeing now? Because literally, and I know it because there's so many things that I have purchased because of her, you know? So
Exactly. That's why I just thought that was so smart for you too. But I know that you have to build up to that level, you know. Do you have any tips for folks before we jump into the lightning round? Any marketing tips from when is it worth it to look to influencers to, you know, how do you make Facebook ads really work for you? Any tips before we jump into lightning round?
Yes. And I hope people are not like, oh, here we go with same old, but you literally have to know who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. So, and speak their language. So, I think our ads perform fairly well because, you know, one, again, like our, the actual content, the actual creative looks really good.
Yep.
And then we're taking things that are like, they're already doing really well. Mm-hmm. So if we know products are already like top sellers, it's like people like this. So obviously if we put it in front of new people, the new people will probably like this as well. So our ads will perform better and we'll get them in the fold, because that's the main thing, is like getting someone in your ecosystem. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like once they make their first purchase, okay, now they're a part of our email list. Now they're a part of our text message list. Now we can retarget them with ads. But you have to, you know, kind of use your shiniest toy to do it. You know what I mean? You have to use the thing that you know people are gravitating towards anyway. Uh-huh. And just making sure you're really speaking to people. And then I would say too, so with Hoop Mob, it's so funny because our customers are now asking for like Hoop Mob branded things. And I've always been against that. Well, not always. We've done it a few times, yeah. But I don't favor it because it's not really about the brand. It's about the customers and how they relate to the brand or how the brand, like Louis Vuitton, it's not about Louis Vuitton. It's about I have Louis Vuitton. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not about the actual brand. It's like what that means for me, yeah. And like what that makes the customer feel. So I feel like when we are talking to our customers, it's really about them. You okay. know what I mean? And it's the brand is just a way to tie it all together. You know what I mean? So I feel like people kind of lead with their brand yeah. and lead with the name and all that. Like, if you're a new brand, I don't know you. I don't really care about your name. Like, what does it mean yeah. for me? Yep. You know?
I hear that. All right. So now let us jump into the lightning round. You know the deal. Just answer the first thing that comes to mind. Are you ready? Just take a sip of water.
Yeah.
All right. Number one, what is a resource? Top thing that comes to mind when you think about a resource that has really helped you in your business that you can share with the Side Hustle Pro audience?
I would say YouTube. When people ask me for help with their Facebook ads, I always point them to YouTube. There are people who literally show you step by step, like give you all the tips and tricks. YouTube University is my friend.
Yes. Number two, who is a Black woman entrepreneur who you would want to switch places with for a day and why?
Ooh, I think I would want to switch places with Monique Rodriguez.
Okay.
Because she has grown her brand just to the moon, basically. And so I would just want to see, you know, how it's operating now. Mm. I feel like all of us, she started in her house, very small, yes. and to have it be, you know, just a huge national brand like that. I would love to see what that looks
yes,
like.
I love what she's done. And we might have to circle back for an update episode with her. All right.
Yes.
Number three, what is a non-negotiable part of your day these days?
If I'm deciding to check out and take a nap, that's just a non-negotiable.
I hear
it's
that.
It's going to get done.
Guilt-free.
I don't care who needs a call.
Guilt-free. Okay.
Yes. I am going to check out and take a nap. I am not one of those entrepreneurs who are just all on all the time.
Right.
No, I'm going to take a nap.
I'm gonna take a nap. That should be the title of this episode. No. Number four, what's a personal trait that you think has significantly helped you in business?
Being personable. Mm. I hear that a lot. People say like, oh, you're very relatable. When we were at Essence, people were surprised that I was the owner because I was just in the trenches helping them
yeah.
shop.
Yeah.
And so I think just being able to run the business without my ego taking mm-hmm. over has helped me.
Absolutely. I love that about you. And then finally, what is your parting advice for fellow women entrepreneurs who want to be their own boss, but are worried about losing that steady paycheck?
I would say bet on yourself. Nothing is guaranteed. Mm-hmm. You can get fired tomorrow and you'll have to figure it out anyway. Your best investment is yourself. You have all the tools you need. Literally, I'm sure there is signs leading to, you know, the things that you really want to do or what's on your heart or the gifts that you have. Yes. So I would just say to listen to that, to not be afraid of that. Literally all things are possible. So to just really believe in that.
Perfect way to end this show. And you guys, remember to check this episode out on YouTube and see if you haven't already gone to her Instagram or what have you, just her awesome, awesome line. I mean, I'm looking at my earrings. They're all dull and flat and your jewelry is just popping off the screen. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? Like, I need to re-up and get me some Hoop Mob. So please, please do that. And where can people connect with you and Hoop Mob after this episode?
Yeah. So if you want to connect with me, you can find me on Instagram. It's just at Danielle Walton. And then you can follow Hoop Mob at The Hoop Mob on Instagram. Also, if you're on Facebook, make sure you join our Facebook group, which is called Hoop Mob Hideout. Sometimes we show things ahead of time.
Yes.
You know, we get your opinion, your feedback, all of that jazz. So definitely stay connected.
All right, guys. And there you have it. I will talk to you next week. Hey guys, thanks for listening to Side Hustle Pro. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other side hustlers just like you to find the show. And if you want to hear more from me, you can follow me on Instagram at Side Hustle Pro. Plus, sign up for my 6-bullet Saturday newsletter at sidehustlepro.co/newsletter. When you sign up, you'll receive weekly nuggets from me, including what I'm up to, personal lessons, and my business tip of the week. Again, that's sidehustlepro.co/newsletter to sign up. Talk to you soon.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.